I'm James Dean Bradfield, and this is Inspired by Horror. It feels like I've been hearing the name Victor Hara come out of my speakers since I was 16 years old. From the songs of The Clash, Calexico, and U2, amongst others, I've become captivated by the music and story of Chilean musician Victor Hara. I've made an album called Even in Exile, which is inspired by Hara. I'm not the first artist whose creativity has been fueled by Hara, and I wanted to look deeper at why so many have been influenced by him.
Muchas gracias. This next song is for Victor Hara, for those who fought against injustice and who paid the highest price, even in this building.
I was inspired by what had happened to his life and what he stood for and where he came from and just, you know, standing up all the way until the very end.
The proper protest songs, his, are so heartfelt. It's like there's no rage to them. True activists aren't angry. They're just completely determined and completely sure of themselves.
What I find really striking about Hara is that even with his more kind of aggressive, very topical, very detailed songs, where there's more anger in his voice, it's still quite mellifluous and sort of instantly appealing.
It's not about these small acts of cowardice. It's more about the spirit that he tapped into and how he inspired so many people.
It lifted people up, people who were poor and struggling, or people who were imprisoned, or people who were not seen by the upper class of Chile, not seen by the Pinochets. And Victor did that for Chileans, gave them an identity.
This is part two of my journey to find out more about those who have been inspired by the life and work of Victor Hara. And in this part, I wanted to expand my thinking beyond the music and explore other artistic avenues. His story is cinematic in scope and theme, and yet there hasn't been a movie made about Hara. Not yet, at least. Oscar winner Emma Thompson wrote a script about Hara in the late 90s, so I wanted to speak to her about her links to the Hara story. How did you first become aware of Victor Hara and his music?
Well, it was a roundabout way because a strange historic thing. In 73, when I was at school at Camden, school for girls in Camden Town, two girls came from Chile, and it was Mandy and Manuela. They came to my school. But at the time, I only found out about that much later. But so they came having endured the murder of their father and then being exiled, and came to school in Camden Town, where I was at school, and they were the same age as me and my sister. And so there was this strange kind of portal that I wasn't aware of at the time, and then I found out about later. A woman who wanted to make a film about Victor asked me to write the script. So it must have been shortly after Sense and Sensibility. And I think the first time I went to Chile to meet Joan and the girls was 97. I was terrified, you know, because I thought, how can I write something like this? But I was also completely and utterly fascinated by it. Well, first of all, it was wonderful to meet Joan and wonderful to meet Manuel and Amanda. And I went to the dance studios, the foundation, and it was great and met all these sort of extraordinary people. And I'd gone to learn Spanish. I did a Spanish course so that I could speak to everybody in Spanish. But my Spanish wasn't very good. I think I felt a huge weight of responsibility that I couldn't shoulder because I was probably the wrong time. It wasn't necessarily the wrong partnership, but the wrong time. And so I'd started to write. And I think the best bit of what I wrote was really about Victor's journey from where he lived into the center of Santiago, because I just had him going from rural poverty into a kind of institution that had money, and that journey, I think, was rather well written. I mean, I haven't got the script. It'll be down some. It'll be in a box somewhere.
I'd like to ask you about Joan, actually. Do you have many memories of Joan and the two little girls when they came to your school after they fled Chile?
I mean, Joan, it was remarkable. And I got through, I got to, because I didn't know about Victor's music when the girls came to school. You know, we were just, I mean, my dad listened to Neil Diamond, you know. Yes, I know, actually he's pretty bloody great now. But, you know, at the time, he wore a sparkly red sequined all-in-one onesie. So, you know, meeting Joan was, and, you know, the fact that she was a dancer and she'd been injured and she had this absolute steely determination, drive, survival instinct, and also, you know, a kind of integrity that was unassailable and, you know, rock-like. I mean, she's an amazing woman. So my entry into Victor was really through the women in his life, his wife and daughters, whom I admired and liked more than I could say, more than I could express, and just thought, oh my God, what they've been through and how they've responded to it and their lives now. Because what was very interesting to me, I went to Chile twice to do research trips. And the second time I traveled quite far. I went to Iquique, and when the first time we went down to Temuco all together, to march with the Mapuche and on, you know, Independence Day. And so we saw a little bit of the country. But then when I went back, I went to Antofagasta and really sort of started to get a feel about this extraordinary country as well. And I started to get very, very interested in the children of the disappeared, and very interested in the inherited trauma from that great, terrible time, the 73 coup, and what happened to people. And I started to think about how fascinating it would be to make a story about the following generation through Victor's music, get into it through his music, but show the next generation, because it seemed to me in those two visits, the thing that came through to me, yes, that the country was still very fearful back then, 97 and 98, 99, you know, the plebiscite had only just really happened, 88 it was, the plebiscite. You know, there was still no historical literature in the bookshops about Chile's history and about the viciousness of the dictatorship. And so, and I think that in the end, you know, the women in his life to me were, you know, huge heroines, and they were living in a country that was clearly still violently divided, deeply, deeply divided. So you could find in one family, one side of the family being Pinochetista and the other side being, you know, Allende, is really sort of literally in the same family, which of course does happen in all countries where there are, you know, these political spectra. But with Chile, it was also recent and everything felt so raw. The first impression I got of Joan was the terrible rawness still 25 years later of that pain and that loss and how awful it was. I really got to feel that. And when I went to visit families, for instance, the children of trade union leaders who'd been, you know, taken away and murdered, I was intensely and unforgettably struck by what it had done to them. And I got fascinated by that too. And I thought, core blimey, you know, if I ever went back to it and tried to write something, although, you know, in the end I thought, well, Chileans should write it, you know, because they'll know it better. But sometimes it's good to have an outside eye, and that's what I was hoping that I would be able to offer. But in the end I proved, you know, not up to it really.
The women in Victor's life have had a strong influence on this record, because understanding Joan's story, his mother's story, and Violetta Parra's story is key to understanding Victor fully. The way that Victor sings, for me, is always more feminine in its approach. The fact that Victor grew up listening to his mother sing and play guitar, and then the large influence of Violetta Parra's songwriting, came to affect him so much. These two factors are what subsequently made Victor Jara's style so attractive to me. His songs have the tone of request, empathy, incantation. They are the result of these women's influence on his music. I tried to represent this in the song The Boy from the Plantation, with the recurring guitar motif in the chorus. It was an attempt to show the bond fused by his mother's guitar and him. In the track, From the Hands of Violetta, I wanted to show Parra's opposite characteristics. The ethereality of her voice in harmony with the unrelenting drive that pushed her to exhibit paintings in Paris, tour the world and travel extensively in Chile to chronicle Chilean folk songs. The undulations of tempo, mood and keys were an attempt to show the push and pull of ambition, passion, heartbreak and leadership that eventually led to the tragic end of Parra's life. Joan was a ballet dancer when she met Victor, and Victor's legacy has had an influence over that art form as well. The ballet, Ghost Dances, was written and choreographed by Christopher Bruce. He knew Joan.
I first met Joan in the late 70s, and she presented me with the book, An Unfinished Song, which was the story of her life in dance and meeting Victor, and of course the terrible tragedies of the coup in the early 70s. And her story, her book, together with the music of Inti Illimani, the Chilean folk group, was basically the inspiration for the piece. I wanted, yes, to tell their story, but I wanted to make it more, in a sense, the piece more universal than that. So even though, yes, it's sort of very much about Chile and the Pinochet coup, it could be about many events happening in the world around that time and since, frankly. So I sort of distilled the piece. I made it very, very simple, even naive in sort of structure. But it was inspired by Joan's book. And in the piece, there is very much a Joan and Victor couple. And I think that is very much in evidence in the third track, La Dolencias, where there's a duet between a girl and a woman in a red dress, who is a kind of matriarchal figure in the piece, who leads the group of characters who I call the dead. And in the piece, she is sort of, there's a movement motif which is a sort of crossing backwards and forwards across the stage. And it's as though she's searching for Victor. So it was very much inspired by Joan and Victor's story.
It's a hard line to walk, isn't it? You know, to create a living, breathing piece of art or performance out of something which references so much bloodshed and murder. You know, how did you do it?
Yeah, I make a lot of pieces which tend to have the darker sides of life involved. And it's very easy to slip into a kind of self-indulgence, make the piece over-emotional. So you have to be very, very guarded. And you just have to find a form in the dance and in the drama that tells the narrative or expresses emotions and feelings, which is, I would say, understated. And you leave the audience plenty of space to interpret what they're looking at and listening to in their own individual way. I simplified the piece. It's a series of images and very, very, as I say, stripped away, simple movement. Not easy, not simple to dance, because dancers all over the world find it a notoriously difficult piece to perform and get their legs around the movement. But in terms of structure and form, it is a very simple piece, and where I let the movement tell the story and give the dancers the space to interpret the work. But you're right, it is a very, very difficult and delicate balance. I've seen a lot of very worthy works which I felt just become overblown because they're too emotional. I think what I do is try and strip away the emotion and think in terms of, I'm trying to make a good dance. I'm trying to make a work using my knowledge of the craft of choreography. I'm trying not so much to tell a story as to make a good piece of dance. And I think if the structure and the craft is good, it will do the work for you. And the emotion should come out, for me, mainly in an understated way. And that's why with my dancers, I tell them not to emote, not to overact, let the movement say everything. I just feel very, very fortunate and flattered when something works as well as Ghost Dancers seems to have done over the years. And yeah, I'm proud of the piece because it is, it's a serious piece which seems to engage people and make them think about the world, history, events, politics, humanity, inhumanity. And as I say, I don't make a piece to preach. I love making dance. So I try to make a good dance. And if it can say something at the same time, that sort of is the icing on the cake.
In tracks like The Last Song and There Will Come a War, there is direct reference to bloodshed and murder. And the problem you ask yourself is, how do you portray that in musical terms? How can you find vitality in death? Or how do you avoid the operatic so as not to cheapen the history that it is based upon? With There Will Come a War, I decided to focus on the fear in Patrick Jones's lyric. We've all had that experience of, I don't know, where real fear kicks in, where time expands, where everything slows down. That was my approach for There Will Come a War. I still think a cinematic version of Hara's life is there for the telling. And Emma's script might not be consigned to the cardboard box forever. You could argue over the last 10 years or so that Hollywood has finally learned how to depict musicality. And whilst recognising that, you know, Victor is not remotely showbiz and he's not a rock star, you kind of get the feeling that Hollywood could do that film about Victor Hara now. Do you think it's more viable to do a film about him now these days?
Oh God, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you could now. I agree with you. There's been a lot of, you know, use of music and biopics, all of those things. It's very interesting that how popular they are as well. I mean, obviously, as you say, it's not rock and roll. So, but you could make this film now. It would be a wonderful thing to do. A wonderful thing to do. And you could make it with a skeleton crew on the ground, very much on the ground. I think that's the thing about it. I think that, you know, one of the things he said famously, I remember, is, you know, he'd come to London, I think. Yeah, he had. He'd come to London. And he was kind of appalled by consumerism of London and said, God, blimey, I can't wait to get home, because in Chile, at least, bread is still bread. And you'd have to make the film with that kind of production value. Bread is still bread. You know, very much close to the ground and far away from the center. It would be, I don't know, I should really think about it again. But I always think, well, there must be wonderful filmmakers in Chile.
What still astounds me about Victor Jara is that, you know, you have the run-up to 1973 and the coup. There's so much brutality. There's so much threat of violence in the air. But he never lets that affect his delivery. He never really lets that affect his message. Everything is always so wrapped in a tender-hearted faithfulness. You know, he never, ever, ever gets bitter or even remotely nasty in any of his songs. You know, how does he do that? Is that what strikes you?
Oh, I totally agree with you. I was re-listening to some of his songs when you'd asked me to do this, and just thinking, gosh, James is absolutely right. It's, you know, you think about Quilapayún and Intilimani. Well, Intilimani is a whole other thing, of course. The proper protest songs his are, you know, so heartfelt. It's like there's no rage to them. And I think that's because of where he came from. You know, the true activist, I think, you know, comes from the place that they're acting for. And that informs them. And it means, generally speaking, in my experience, true activists aren't angry. They're just completely determined and completely sure of themselves. Do you know what I mean? I think with it's people who sort of support them, who haven't had such difficult lives and come in from the outside, they're the ones who get very, very angry, you know, and rageful, even though it wasn't actually their direct lived experience. Do you know what I mean? And over the years when I've met around the world, lots and lots of amazing activists, and they're happy to be doing it, really. And very, they're just sort of inspiring. And Victor's songs are like that. They're just, there's just no, I mean, I'm sure he did feel rage, of course, don't we all? But that's not the driving emotion in his music.
And it's Jara the Activist that I want to focus on next time on Inspired by Jara.
The songs of Victor Jara obviously communicated in Chile itself. To us, I mean, his style of singing was very soft and tender. He wasn't a raucous protest singer in any shape or form, but he obviously had a way with words as well. But the great thing about people like him, his songs very often have a message to the world.
What I find really striking about Jara is that even with his more kind of aggressive, very topical, very detailed songs, where there's more anger in his voice, it's still quite mellifluous. And it really made me think that actually in America, Dylan, one of the huge influences that Dylan had was that you would have this kind of edge to your voice, and there would be a certain kind of a sort of barbed humor or a kind of, you know, serrated edge to the way that you sang. And even when Jairus Bejarano is being quite angry, it's very, you can see it's very much in that South America, that Nueva Canción tradition, where it's mellifluous and sort of instantly appealing.